Yo, yo, yo.
Hey, how's it going, Bruno?
Not bad, man. How are you?
Not bad. Been a crazy week, but happy to be sitting here and chatting.
Fuck yeah, man. Was pretty sick flight car last week.
Yeah, definitely. What did you end up thinking of Till versus Whitaker?
I thought Whitaker won.
Oh, me too. Honestly, I can't for the life of me think about why people are complaining. Like, I can't figure it out. And I know that there's not a ton of them, but definitely like a vocal minority who, for whatever reason, thought Till should have won. But I just think he came out really strong in the first round, and then for whatever reason, yeah, didn't find the gas pedal again for the rest of the fight.
Yeah, I mean, I think we kind of hit the nail on the head with the predictions last week that Whitaker was just a better wrestler. Like, he was going to go in there and really mix it up a lot more. I think at the end of the day, like, he was the pressure fighter. He was landing the harder, cleaner punches. I mean, obviously, first round goes to Till. Not even really sure. I honestly thought that Whitaker kind of coasted rounds 2 through 5, but I can also see how Till might have won some of those rounds, but I think regardless, like, both guys can be really happy with their performances. I think Hill's got nothing to be upset about. Like, it just really just shows that he's right there at the top with all these guys at middleweight. So, and Whitaker just showed that he is the number one contender and he deserves that rematch against Adesanya. So.
Yeah, and it'll be interesting to see what they do with him next, because because obviously Izzy has Paulo Costa coming up, and yeah, I would think Whitaker should be next in line, but it was so weird things happen, with the matchmaking.
Yeah, 100%. I actually thought that last week we were pretty spot on with like all the predictions that we put out.
Yeah, I mean, did any of them surprise you?
Not at all. I mean, I'm trying to open this shit up here, but give me a minute.
Yeah, see you there.
Fucking computer's being crazy right now.
It was definitely like an okay card, but kind of a forgettable one.
Yeah,
Like
100%.
I'm currently like, who the hell was the main event? I mean, the co-main event. I know I saw it.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I thought there were some fights like it's really cool to see these guys that are like wicked active fighting on the undercard, like Tanner Boser, like came in
Oh
and
yeah.
just like knocked out Rafael Pessoa, like round two, big KO. Also we had some controversy with that Trinaldo fight, the main event of the prelims with Dan Hardy kind of jumping up out of his seat and yelling at Herb Dean. What do you think about that?
I think that it was honestly like kind of unprofessional of Dan Hardy, because like he's supposed to be a commentator and not that kind of be about losing his shit.
Yeah.
But because it's like the referee is supposed to be the authority in there, and we can't, and I feel like it compromises the integrity of it to have commentators sort of influencing it. And I mean, if that's something unique to the COVID era fights. We've been hearing, numerous stories of how like fighters would hear like what Michael Bisping said, and then suddenly
Change your game
they're
plan or something. Yeah.
exactly. And so like it's actually been an interesting dynamic. And I don't have any problem with that. But I do think like when you're there as a commentator, you do have to kind of keep your cool.
Yeah, I
But
get that,
I
but
personally you think not that that with that knockout, I don't think there's going to be any scenario where everybody would have been happy. You know what I
yeah,
mean?
100%. I
Because I
think,
think
yeah, who was it that said that? There was an interview. Was it Big John McCarthy that came out and said it? That it was like a
yeah,
lose-lose situation for him, regardless.
exactly. And that's, I think, kind of the issue of being a ref is that
Yeah.
there's going to be people pissed off at you pretty much no matter what you do. And I mean, the reality is Herb Dean's one of the best in the business, And so
Yeah,
it's
for
like,
sure. But you have to admit though, he was snoozing on that. He was
oh, what?
daydreaming.
He
He was
absolutely was.
daydreaming when that guy went down.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm inclined to agree, but I would have preferred to not see Dan Hardy, like, kind of lose his shit. Like, I thought Paul Felder handled it very well.
Yeah, Felder's the man. So, I mean, I love Dan Hardy. I think, honestly, he's great for, like, European MMA. And I love seeing him kind of, like, he's very smart. And I've got to go to one of his live Q&As at the Donald Cerrone-Leon Edwards fight in Singapore, and I got to actually meet him. He's a very nice guy, very smart guy, and he knows – all the fighters and all the fights on the cards that he's announcing, like top to bottom, dude, commentating, let's say. Like, he's very smart, dude.
Yeah.
Of course, he's going to get a little bit emotional. I think he said, and his take on it was that he doesn't just see fighters in there, you know. He sees, you know, like, it sounds kind of sensitive to a degree, but he sees friends, he sees fathers, he sees someone's kid in there fighting, you know, so he gets a little bit more emotional than he should.
I totally get that. I know that's how I am, but that is the very definition of being a professional.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? It's like, and so, like, and I actually really like Dan Hardy as a commentator, and it's really not a huge problem for me.
Yeah,
but, like, I do think there's a decorum to stuff like that.
Yeah,
and
I would be surprised if the UFC actually gave him any sort of, like, a punishment. Like, maybe they'll give him a slap on the wrist, but
I don't either. Well, because also, too, if nothing else, people are talking about it. And anytime people are talking about these events, it's good for the UFC. But yeah, I just think it's not great for staff working for the UFC to then undermine the referee.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
100%.
That's ultimately what it does. But honestly, I think as a commentator, Dan Hardy's great. I mean, and I think he and Paul Felder have good chemistry together. They're kind of playing off things. And, who was the third guy they had? Like, cause
he's this British guy. I always forget his name. He's really good too, but shit, man, I know exactly who you're talking about. He's a good commentator, but I think he's new. Like, he just does more of, like, the like traveling cards. You know, like whenever they go to, like, Singapore or, I don't know, Dubai or these places like this where they put on fight cards. I typically hear this guy's voice, but.
Yeah, I mean, well, the UFC definitely has, like, their international staff and then their domestic staff.
Yeah, Rogan's on all the big cards, all the domestic stuff with John Anik, and usually DC, I think, does the big cards as well if he's not fighting on them.
Exactly. But, like, Rogan, I know, has said that he refuses to travel at this point in his career. He's like, I won't leave the country to do this.
Yeah.
And so, like, you know, so those are the only ones he recuses himself from. That's why he's missed some big ones just because the UFC's become a very international brand.
Yeah.
And but yeah, because actually I heard McCarthy kind of complaining that John Anik wasn't there, and it's like, dude, they're in the Middle East. It's like, it's probably, he probably wants to stay home for a little bit.
Yeah, for sure, dude. I'm not just, like, you know, during Corona, so inclined to fly over to fucking Abu Dhabi and just sit there in 45 degree weather and commentate a couple fights here and there. I bet you he's making more money off the podcast anyways that he's doing. So,
100%. I mean, the reality is, especially with the frequency that they do these shows, he would have to pretty much be living in Abu Dhabi for it to, like, really make sense for him.
Yeah, he'd have been there for a whole month. And, I mean, he's got kids. He's got a wife.
Oh, exactly. No, it's like, nobody wants to do that. So, I think it's good to have some, like fresh voices in there that we usually don't see.
For sure.
You know, just sort of, you know, because also, too, there may even be I suppose I wouldn't like this if I was a John Anik, but it's like there could be some dynamics that we end up liking better.
For sure. I mean, I always like hearing Dominic Cruz in there. Brian Stann is a guy I haven't heard in a while, but I really liked listening to him commentate for a while when he was done fighting. I think he's a lot smarter than people play him out to be. You know, I mean, in the cage, he was talented, but obviously not the smartest fighter. But I think behind the booth, this guy's also a great commentator. So it's nice to hear them mix it up for sure. Did you see this guy, Khamzat Chimaev, his 10-day turnaround, dude?
Yeah, that was wild.
Did you see the strike differentials they put up on the screen for, like, his first two fights in the UFC?
I missed that. What did they say?
The output was something like 110 to, like, 8, 110 landed to, like, 8 strikes absorbed.
Holy shit. That's wild.
Like, now, fucking absolute sin.
Now, how many knockouts does he have?
Not necessarily sure. Let me pull it up. I know that, obviously, he's trains with Khabib.
Mm-hmm.
He looks very Dagestani, even though he's born in Sweden.
I feel like he's sort of, appropriating some of the cultural stuff when...
Man, every single fight of his has been finished. He's got one, two, three, four, five finishes due to punches, and the other three are submissions.
That's good, because admittedly, like, stats like that, like, I remember they used to always try to tout those stats like Joanna, but then Joanna only had, like, three knockouts. And it's like, and at that point, I almost feel like it's an indictment of your striking. That you can't,
yeah, for sure. Can't crack, pillow hands.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, because with fighters like that, it's like, sure, they're going to land a lot, but that's the problem, because, you know, their opponent doesn't need to respect their power.
For sure. No, this guy just fucking killed that other guy. It was like Khamzat murdered this Rice McKee dude. It was absolute savagery.
Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, there's definitely, you know, I think he's going to be a big thing for the UFC. Like, he definitely has all of the pieces that make for, like, a real contender.
He's just a psychopath. Like, if you think about it. And if you think about all the things that he's saying, dude, the guy's just a fucking psychopath. Like, okay, he fought, beat the absolute piss out of the last guy I fought. And he's like, fuck it, I'm healthy and I don't want to leave, so let me fight somebody else. So they take the number one prospect in the UK or in Europe out of his weight class, throw him in the cage. He beats this guy to a fucking pulp within 5 minutes. And now they want to put him on a card in August, dude. This guy's actually a psychopath.
Dude, I gotta say, though, like, yeah, that's definitely crazy. Maybe you should relax. But I do like that that I'd be active during this period. Actually,
yeah.
The UFC is doing a great job of putting out a ton of content. And so it's great that, you know, guys are jumping at all the chances they can to fight.
For sure, dude. And another crazy story that came out, like, obviously, since the words coming out around this guy Khamzat, I guess him and Connor got into some Twitter beef before, like, during the whole Khabib versus Connor drama going on. And Khamzat had flown to Ireland, like, literally flown to Ireland so he could go to SBG and fight Conor McGregor in the fucking gym, but they arrested him and they fucking sent him back to Sweden.
Oh, that's funny. That also sounds like something Conor would do.
Or yeah, 100%.
Or at least want to make it look like he was doing.
Yeah, like, for sure.
I'm in probably the minority that thinks that, like, the whole bus attack was effectively just a promo.
Yeah, I mean, it looked like a promo, but I also think that Conor's just fucking nuts.
Yeah, I mean, that was definitely, like, during a period where he seemed to be losing his mind.
He was definitely doing, like, a lot of coke.
100%.
Yeah, 100%,
like,
dude.
Like, I don't see any scenario where he wasn't. Like, you would,
yeah, exactly.
Be, okay.
Like, at the press conference when he's sitting there, like, sweating in his Louis Vuitton wife beater, like, with fucking bottles of whiskey everywhere. Like, he's definitely, like, geared out, dude. Like, just fucking yelling crazy shit at people. Like, he's just a maniac.
Oh, well, I also think, too, that press conference with no audience did him no favors. Because he's somebody who, like, plays off of the crowd. And so that just seemed to him like him yelling at a guy who didn't want to engage.
It was, yeah, like, for
quiet,
sure.
And weird and all that. But yeah, I mean, that's pretty interesting. I mean, I probably, if I were a comic, I wouldn't have announced that was what I was doing.
Because
yes, you'll be arrested. Especially somebody like Connor isn't just going to, when his money comes from fighting, he's not just going to let you come in the gym and fight him.
100%.
You know, because that would be one of those things where if he showed up at SBG and then Connor said no, then the story is he's a bitch. If Connor said yes, then he could potentially get very fucked up, and then he's still a bitch.
Yeah.
and so that's just lose. I mean, honestly, like, obviously, like, there's not a whole lot of Budo in that position. You know,
sure.
Like, calling the cops. But, like, I think that was probably the smart move on his team's part.
is what it is. I was super bummed out with Gustafsson. I thought he looked good. But the fight played out, the safe bet that we threw in there. I mean
– Oh, yeah, almost verbatim. You know,
it was almost word for word that if he could clinch him and take him down, like, there would be no chance for Gus on the ground, and that's exactly how it went.
Well, and Gus just looked too small for heavyweight. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, he's a big 205-er, but he just, like, seems to be at best average as the heavyweight. And when you're used to being the guy who's bigger than everybody, then that sucks. You know what I mean?
For sure. I mean, like, I think the weights were a little similar, but Verdum's obviously like a natural heavyweight. Like, I don't think he could probably cut down to 205 if he fucking tried, dude. He's just like a big, thick, meat and potatoes Brazilian guy.
Exactly.
Couldn't make 205 if he tried.
It's like, well, in Gustafsson's whole style is really kind of built around, though, him being a junior fighter.
Yeah.
To have advantage at heavyweight. So I feel like he needs to do some, like, real homework if he plans to stay at heavyweight, which it wouldn't surprise me at all if we hear he's either A, retiring, or B, going back down. Frankly,
I think he was saying that he doesn't want to go back at heavyweight. I think he was saying that it was kind of like if he were to have been successful at heavyweight, he would have tried to have made a run, but I think he said that his real home's at 205, and he's a little bit more reinvigorated. I could see him just kind of testing the waters, seeing how things go at heavyweight. But I think ultimately he goes back down to 205. And I actually think he performs a little better than he did in that skid he had.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think, like, I mean, the Anthony Smith fight was weird, because that's something where that's one where I wouldn't have Gustafsson to really, like, I don't know. I thought that was – I know I'm stammering a bit, but I remember betting that would be clear-cut Gustafsson. So that one surprised me. But other than that, there's no shame in losing to Jon Jones and Dan Cormier.
Never.
You know what I mean?
And he lost a split decision to Cormier. So he's given the two pound-for-pound arguably best fighters to have fought in the UFC the fight of their lives. So there's no question that Gus is no joke, and that he's – if he decides to take it seriously and he's as motivated as he says he is, I think he can have another run at 205.
Oh, I agree, especially if Jones ends up leaving. You know what I mean?
And I don't think he does.
But yeah, no, unfortunately. You know, because I think he's – the division's dead with him there. And now, granted, I do want to see him fight Dominic again. But other than that, I really don't care.
Neither. I actually don't really care for Dominic either, bro. I think this guy, I mean, he's exciting to watch fight and stuff like that, but I mean, I guess in this day and age where your personality kind of ties in your fighter's persona, I think this guy's fucking corny, dude.
Yeah, no, I agree. But at least if Jones loses or leaves, then it kind of blows the doors open on the division, because then there's a bunch of matchups we haven't seen. Whereas 100%. Jones has fought everybody from the aging vets to the, to the up and comers. Even Thiago Santos, like, I don't think he was ready to fight Jon Jones, but it's like, who else was Jones going to fight? You know what I mean?
Fair enough. You know, the co-main event of this card was lackluster. I mean, Shogun versus Little Nog, the trilogy, Hua 3-0, read him and weep.
Yeah, I mean, well, that's the thing. It's like, I mean, I'm glad they're setting up sort of senior division fights, especially, like, if they want to keep fighting, you know, because, like, I don't need to see Shogun get beat down by a guy like a Thiago Santos or Dominic Reyes or any of them. But like, when you already won two of them, it's like, there's no reason to do the trilogy.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, Shogun's old. Fucking Lil Nog's old. They're all old. I remember I was really excited to watch the Shogun versus Anthony Smith fight. I was actually live at that one. That's where Manny beat up Stevie Ray, I think, right?
That was Davey Grant.
Davy Grant, sorry. They're the same guy. Stevie Ray, Davy Grant. Tomatoes, tomatoes, man. But holy shit, dude, I was fucking absolutely mind blown to see a guy like Shogun just like, I mean, Shogun's fought a lot of people and I've never seen him really get starched like that. And fucking Anthony Smith came in there and really laid it on him. So, I mean, it's obvious that he can't really hang with the new blood and he's probably just looking to kind of get the last couple fights out of the way in his career. I actually wouldn't be surprised if we didn't see him fight again. He just decides at this point, like, I'm going to run a school. I'm going to retire. Like, this is it for me. Like, out on top, oh, yeah. You know, won the trilogy. Game over.
Absolutely. Yo, because I honestly, I think of him similar to how I think of Aldo now. Because honestly, like, Shogun's offense is still good. Like, you can tell he still packs a punch. But he's just not durable at all. Like, his chin went a while ago. He just, they can't really hang with guys like that. If he, you know, because he also doesn't have a style where he could fight and not be able to get hit, you know?
Yeah, for like, sure.
Like Randy Couture was able to keep fighting even after he kind of, like, lost some durability.
Yeah, but he was fighting in a day and age where it was, like, you know, he was fighting, like, also old guys in his division. And then once the new blood came in, like, that new generation of martial artists, he was pretty much getting fucking hammered to the ground.
It's like, well, and he also had a style where he was just going to get you against the fence and dirty box you and take you down, where Shogun wants to stand in front of you and kickbox.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, there's no, you know, it's like, there's no way he doesn't get, you know, knocked out now by these guys. And so, I mean, 100%. My hope is that he retires as well, because I also can't think of any guys who he, you know, who are in, like, a similar situation as him. You know, I mean, granted, yeah. I didn't even think Lil Nog was still fighting, but, you know, they dug him up.
And so, yeah, like, yeah, I mean, I think he was on a 2-year layoff. I think Shogun was definitely the fresher fighter. I think he was coming off of a win, so.
Yeah. But, yeah, unless, like, Tito Ortiz comes back to the UFC for whatever reason, then Shogun should probably retire.
Yeah, the only reason why Tito would come back is so Dana could watch him fucking die in the cage, dude.
Yeah, but that's one of the. I could picture Dana being petty like that.
100%.
You know what? I'd still tune in.
Yeah, I would fucking watch that, dude. I would love to see, like, I don't know, something like Daniel Cormier versus Tito Ortiz and just watch Tito get the shit beat out of him.
Oh, man. But, yeah, I mean, honestly, like, I think sideshow fights are fun. Like, I don't want them to be treated as a main event or something, but, like, they're fun. They're a good time.
I'm happy that the UFC is kind of phased away from sideshow fights. Can we try to remember the sideshow fights? Well, we had Couture versus James Toney, right? This was like sideshow fight number one.
Yeah, that CM Punk and his career.
CM Punk and his entire career fighting a guy. I honestly think that if I could have fought Mike Jackson in that ring, in that octagon, I would have put up a better fight than CM Punk did.
Well, wasn't he like a photographer or something? Who they were like, you know, because I thought I heard this weird story where they were like, hey, do you want to fight?
Pretty essentially, yeah, dude. They were just like, I think he had like a 1-1 record or a 2-1. Yeah. I have no idea. CM Punk's 0-1 from his loss to Mickey Gall, who's obviously a fucking beast and put him through the ringer. But yeah, I think the guy was like 2-1, was like a photographer. They asked him if he wanted to fight. He won. I think they gave him another – I think they might have given him 2 more UFC fights until they released him. But, yeah, none of those guys deserve to be on a fucking UFC card, dude. That's fucking embarrassing. And the money, CM Punk was getting paid for that shit in comparison to, like, guys that are, like, literally doing this their entire fucking lives. Like Jeff Neal that's waiting tables at a Texas Roadhouse, but CM Punk's making more money than him on one fucking fight. It's kind of bullshit.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's – you know, I'm definitely not somebody who they should have fucked with at all, or maybe, like, if they wanted to experiment with that, I don't know if the Contender Series was a thing at that point, but just, like, because they've always kind of, like, unofficially had promoters who were friends with, who they put guys who they wanted to see, like, on their shows. Like, I know in Mass, World Championship Fighting, WCF, was kind of that, because Dana and the promoter, Joe Cavallaro, were friends. And so there were, I know, at least a couple times where Dana was like, hey, could you guys put this guy on? And, you know, it's like, we want him to get some work and all that. And, you know, so even doing something like that where you put CM Punk in, like, a local show, can even kind of work it out with the promoter or something. It's like, yeah, just a field of experience. But, you know, I had heard that behind closed doors, you know, it got to the point with CM Punk, or it was really Phil Brooks. It feels weird.
Phil Brooks. Phil Brooks.
But I know but like it got to the point where they were wondering if it would be more damaging to have him fight and get his ass kicked or to just not fight. And,
fair.
All parties kind of realized it's a bad idea after a while. Because you know, he wasn't Brock Lesnar or Bobby Lashley, who had like real wrestling pedigrees. And Brock's sure. also a freak. And, you know, it's like he is like a regular guy who had a blue belt. And let's be real, it was a fake blue belt in jiu-jitsu.
And he can do a backflip. You
know? Yeah. it's funny because I'm like, he didn't even look that built when he fought. He just kind of looked like
he's old. I mean, he was like, CM Punk was like a young up-and-coming wrestler when I was like a kid, dude. He was like in his fucking like late 20s already. So I'm saying like fast forward like 8, 9 years, 10 years, dude. He's like almost 40 years old and you're giving him a UFC fight?
Yeah, because I want to say he was like 36, 37 when they signed him. And it's like, and yeah, it's not like he's trained his entire life or was a college wrestler or a kickboxer or anything. You know, because yeah, I think CM Punk was like in the generation of wrestling like right after when I stopped watching. Because like I stopped watching when I was probably like 13 in like the Stone Cold Attitude Era. And and then I think like John Cena and CM Punk came in afterwards.
Yeah, 100%, dude. That's exactly what happened. And this is when wrestling got like a little weird. But for sure, like very strange. I kind of feel bad for Duke Rufus's camp after that because, I mean, he obviously puts out like a lot of really tough guys, like championship caliber fighters. You've got guys like Ben Askren, Anthony Pettis, Paul Felder, I know trains there sometimes. Like Alan Belcher was a Duke Rufus guy, like OG. That guy was fucking awesome to watch fight. Like Duke Rufus puts out some really good fighters and he vouched hard for CM Punk. And for him to go out there and lose not once but twice pretty embarrassingly, kind of feel for that guy on that level. I'm happy he's recovered from that.
But I mean, I will say, I don't think anybody was really punishing Duke Rufus for CM Punk sucking. Because nobody was ever actually expecting him to do well.
Yeah.
You know? And I kind of forgave the first time when he fought Mickey Gall. You know, it's like, okay, now let him ride off of the sunset, be done. He had his, you know, he had his experience. It didn't work out. It's time for that to be done. But then to give him the second fight, that was ridiculous.
Let me look up this guy, Mike Jackson, dude. I just want to see, like, who the fuck this guy really is. Mike the Truth Jackson. Yeah, he's 1-1. So he was 0-1 when he fought. All right, weirdly enough, he was 0-0. 0-1 as an amateur. And then they gave him to Mickey Gall. You know that? Do you remember that the Johnny Hendricks versus Stephen Thompson fight card where Thompson went in there and like just knocked him out?
Yeah.
Mike Jackson fought Mickey Gall on that card, lost by rear naked choke in 45 seconds.
Oh wow! I didn't know that.
So he was 0-1 as a pro when he was going in against that fight with CM Punk.
Well, it's like, and that's the weird thing too about like having a guy like CM Punk in, you know, in there is that then, if you want it to be at all compelling, you have to bring in other people who don't belong there.
Yeah.
And like, you know, because like Mike Jackson and frankly, even Mickey Gall, I think Gall would have gotten in eventually, but I think he definitely got in too quickly because they wanted him to fight CM Punk.
I mean, it made sense.
Yeah. I mean, when he was at least like legitimately credentialed. But then you know, Mike Jackson is probably the worst fighter they could get. And they're like, here, maybe you can fight CM Punk.
Should have let me fight his ass, bro. I would have taken that payday.
I remember there was a point where, like, every local fighter out there was trying to volunteer to fight CM Punk.
I would have done it, dude. I'm not even a local fighter. I would have done it off the couch, dude. Cut some weight.
Dude, honestly, like, I feel like it would have been more compelling to bring in, like, in a super aging guy like Renzo Gracie or Pat Miletich and have them fight it. Because at least then it's like, you know, it's like, yeah, they're old too, probably beaten down and don't have a whole lot left. And they'd probably still win. But then it's like, you know, you get the nostalgia of watching a guy like Pat Miletich fight. And who knows, they're old. Maybe CM Punk would beat him anyway.
Yeah, who knows, man. Have you taken some time to look at this weekend's fight card?
A little. I was looking over today. I'm excited for the main event. This guy, Edmund, I really have enjoyed watching fight. I mean, it's weird that I'm looking forward to watching somebody out of Edmund Tervadian's camp. But dude, he seems legit. And so I think that should be good.
Yeah, Shabazzian's no joke, dude. And I guess he was actually one of Ronda Rousey's main training partners for a long time when he was like 16 years old, dude. And wow. Who was it? I think Jake Ellenberger was saying that when this kid was like 17 years old and Jake Ellenberger was like having fight camps, that Emin Shabazzian gave him absolute fucking hell in the gym, dude, as a 17-year-old kid.
Damn. And,
so, I mean, I guess every gym has a guy like that, right? I mean, every gym has a young stud that, I mean, either they go in there and they do really well, or they go in, they do well, and then they cave under their pressure. But this guy seems like he just, like, embraces it. He's been surrounded by all these, like, UFC superstars for such a long time, and they've really just molded him into a super talented fighter.
And so my hope would be for him that – frankly, that he goes to another camp. Maybe I'm full of shit here, but a great athlete can make a shitty coach look good.
Yeah.
You just have to look at the combined record of Edmund Tervadian's guys.
Yeah.
Where, aside from Shabazzian and Ronda, virtually everybody has super losing records coming out of his team. Like Jake
Especially
Ellenberger,
Travis Brown, dude.
Yeah, dude. Jake Ellenberger and Travis Brown, that was where their careers went to die.
100%, dude, because Jake Ellenberger was a fucking steamroller, dude. I remember he knocked out Jake Shields. He was knocking people out, like flatlining, steamrolling people.
Oh,
and Travis Brown as well, dude.
Yeah. And
I think the only fight that Travis won while he was at Tverdian's was that fight against Matt Mitrione in Boston.
Yeah, I think you're right.
I think that's the only fight he won.
Now, was that the one where he ended up poking Mitrione in the eye?
Yeah, and then you looked up at the big screen and Mitrione had like a fucking baseball in his eyeball and like in his eye socket. Like,
yeah, I forgot. Like, admittedly, too, like Travis Brown is somebody who, you know, being a woman beater is somebody who I really was happy to see fail.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
But it's like, but yeah, I mean, like, Edmund Tervadian is just not a good coach. But like, the unfortunate thing for athletes like Ronda Rousey and Edmund Shabazzian is that, you know, like I said, a great athlete can make a shitty coach look good. I mean, Edmund seems like a guy who would be in the UFC no matter where he went.
100%.
It's like, so why not then go to a good team? Because like, you know, obviously he's going to get to the point in the UFC where he's going to fight other guys like that who also happen to be a good team.
Yeah, it's because he's Armenian, dude. And so is his coach, dude. I'm telling you, these guys are stuck like glue now.
I do hope that Shabazzian, I mean, maybe it'll come when he meets some resistance, but I hope he finds his way to a proper coach.
For sure. I mean, Derek Brunson's also a really talented fighter. We've seen him knock out pretty much, I think, almost all the fights he's won. He's knocked the guy out. So, packs a really mean punch. He's fought almost everybody. But definitely, I still think that he's the gatekeeper fight for Shabazzian to break into, you know, it's like the Sean O'Malley versus, who did he fight? Eddie Wineland fight, dude. You know, it's like,
yep.
You get a guy that's got a bunch of solid wins, right? And then you just throw him in front of a young contender.
Yeah, I was just about to say that. I mean, Derek Brunson is definitely like the go-to gatekeeper who who's very dangerous if you don't belong past him. But yeah. But for the young prospect, it's like if they can beat him, that means they're ready to fight. You know, the cream of the crop there.
For sure, because sorry.
No, I was just gonna say, because Brunson's somebody who will never beat the guy, but he's good enough where he can stop everybody else who isn't gonna beat the guy.
Exactly. Very fair point. And I was just gonna say that Brad Tavares also super tough guy. I think he was a top 10 middleweight at the time or top 15 at least. And Shabazzian made fucking super easy work of him. And I've never seen. I mean, the last time I saw Tavares get finished like that was by Whitaker, who was the champ, you know. So
definitely, Tavares isn't an easy night for anybody.
No, you know, he's tough, dude.
If I remember correctly, even Israel Adesanya, went to decision, but he had to work in that fight.
Yeah, for sure, dude. Also, another fight I'm super excited about is the Vicente Luque fight. Love watching this guy fight. Yeah. I think that the UFC's got to put some respect on this guy's name.
Me too. I agree. I'm definitely looking forward to it as well. It will be interesting to see what the UFC does, provided this fight goes well, to see what the UFC does with him.
He's fighting Randy Brown. I mean,
I don't think I know much about Randy Brown.
Randy Brown, I think, is actually from Springfield, Mass, dude.
Oh, in that case, I think I do know Randy Brown. I didn't think it was that one.
Yeah, this is the Randy Brown that fought Mickey Gall. He fought Worldly Alves, Brian Barberena.
Huh, that's right. I hate to say it, but I completely forgot about him.
Yeah, me too, man. But he's fighting Randy Brown. I think Randy's coming off of a 2-fight win streak. Vicente's just beat Nico Price in his last fight, but before his loss to Stephen Thompson, he beat Mike Perry, Derek Krantz, Brian Barberena, Jalen Turner, Chad Laprise, and Nico Price. And all of those fights, pretty much, except for the Mike Perry fight, were finishes. So Vicente's fucking tough as shit, dude.
Oh, definitely. I mean, that's a solid resume. Vicente.
And then we also got Lando Venata, Bobby Green rematch. I love watching both those guys fight.
Me too. What are your thoughts on it?
The last fight, I think, was a draw, right? If I remember correctly. I think the last fight was a draw.
I think you're right.
I think there were some points deducted in that fight as well. Let me just cross check. Yeah. Venata was deducted 1 point in round one due to an illegal knee. So it was a split draw. I think both of them have very similar styles. Like, these guys like to come in with their hands down and very loose and throw a lot of kicks and a lot of crazy shit going on. But I think Lando takes it. I think Lando's the more talented striker.
Yeah, I can definitely see that. I mean, it should be fun either way. But I think you're right. I'd put my money on Lando too.
Yeah, and then we got Eric Spicely in his second UFC return. He's coming off a loss, but he's sparking Marcus Perez. I mean, any New England guy that's out there fighting in the UFC has my respect. So, hope Eric Spicely can pull out the victory.
Me too. I've only met Eric one or two times, but I really like him. He's a good dude.
Yeah, he's got a victory over Thiago Santos, dude. So, I think he's not a slouch.
And then when he was returned to the local circuit, I know ended up beating Kyle Magalash, Vinny's cousin, who Kyle himself was a UFC vet.
Yeah, I'm looking at that now. So, yeah, smashed him. Beat him in the first round. So, yeah, hope Eric does well. That's this week's up-and-coming UFC fight card. Did you see that they announced Gaethje versus Khabib for October?
I did. I'm actually – honestly, part of me is kind of surprised that it's happening so soon. I halfway figured that to be pushed to December when Ali came out talking about how it was just going to happen before the end of the year. I figured that would be the New Year's card.
Yeah, because I remember him saying that he didn't expect Khabib to retire at all, and Dana was saying that they would give Khabib all the time in the world that he needed, until he felt ready to come back. But I think that – I'm actually kind of scared for – it's hard to say it. Like, I don't want to say it, but I think we're going to see the best Khabib we've ever seen, like a very motivated kind of like his dad is like a martyr to him in this fight. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, he's going to go out there and we're going to see like a version of Khabib that maybe we've never seen before, hopefully.
Yeah, I mean, I think it'll go one of two ways. Either it'll gas him up or bring him down. If I had to put money on one of them, I would say gas him up. You know, yeah. He doesn't seem like the type who gets deflated easy.
Nope.
And so, yeah, I mean, I know a lot of people were saying that they think Gaethje is going to be the guy. I can't really picture it. I mean, Gaethje's saying the right things. You know, he knows he can't let his back touch the fence or anything like that. And obviously, he was a good wrestler himself. But, you know, Khabib doesn't beat you with wrestling. He beats you with pressure.
100%.
You know, he just, like, takes your soul away. And it'll be interesting to see if Gaethje has an answer for that.
For sure, and I guess it's really hard to really judge because when you have a guy like Khabib, who obviously his game plan is to wrestle you, and he's fighting with he's training with a lot of wrestling based fighters. Like, these guys are probably wrestling every single day, super high level wrestling all throughout training camp. It's really hard to judge. I mean, Gaethje being, I think he was a 2-time All American in college as a wrestler, but. How often does he really wrestle that competitively training for MMA?
Oh, yeah. I mean, and I do remember, like, seeing an interview with Gaethje, like, a while ago where he had said he pretty much stopped wrestling, you know, when he started training MMA. You know, I mean, he just doesn't really practice it much because he's already good at it. I could be talking out of my ass here, but I don't think I am. I'm just trying really hard to remember a specific interview, but yeah, I mean, you never really see him use it, and so it'll be, whereas Khabib, that's all he does, so it'll be interesting to see how this goes, but I do have a harder time picturing, you know, Gaethje getting the win, because Khabib's not just going to stand in front of him, you know, he won't for a second, he's just always working, and that's what ultimately ends up beating people, because hell, from a technical standpoint, Gaethje could be the better wrestler.
Sure.
But Khabib's ability to chain move and just keep working with everything is unparalleled.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, at this point, I'm just tired of betting against Khabib. I think for a while I was a hater. And I think I was a hater really up until the McGregor fight. Because I even think in that Iaquinta fight where he won the belt, like Iaquinta was coming back and you could arguably say one or two rounds in that fight. So I was like, if you get a guy with good takedown defense with solid hands, like, I could see him losing. But then once he fought Poirier is when I was really impressed, like extremely impressed.
Well, I think seeing the Iaquinta and McGregor fight, I honestly think that Khabib in 5-round fights just takes the 3rd round off. And because that was the round that both Al and Connor won.
Yeah.
So at both those points, Khabib wasn't in danger at all. He was just kind of like moving around a little bit. And so my guess would be, because obviously his style requires a huge gas tank. I'm thinking that if Khabib wins the first 2 rounds, which he so far, you know, virtually always seems to do, that he'll probably take the 3rd round off. And then come back for 4 and 5.
Yeah, I can see it.
Yeah, because especially too, like, you know, Al certainly capable of knocking people out, and obviously Connor is at some point in the fight. Neither one of them had anything left. I mean, you can just see like Connor looked so utterly deflated at that point that you know, because you're just exhausted, and he was almost killed in the 2nd round.
And I mean, that's what cocaine and whiskey will do to you during a fight camp.
I'm a Connor fan, but I can't think of any scenario where Connor wins that fight. You know, I thought he had a brief moment in the first fight where after he stuffed that takedown, he could have maybe landed a couple punches as he was getting up rather than trying to wrestle him. But that, you know, that doesn't mean that would have knocked him out. That just would have been a brief moment where Connor could have seen some success.
100%, dude. And then Another really interesting. So obviously we saw Davison Figueiredo beat Benavidez the second time to actually win the belt. No hiccups there. Cody Garbrandt openly discussing that he wants to drop down to 125 to potentially challenge Figueiredo for the belt. How do you see a fight like that going?
So I know Garbrandt said the negotiations already started. I honestly kind of, you know, I don't know. I have to, maybe like Garbrandt is somebody I underestimate, but I have to bet on Figueiredo. I just think Garbrandt's kind of a one-trick pony. And while he looked tremendous in that last fight, I just can't shake the imagery of the three beforehand where he fought like a donkey and got knocked out.
Yeah, it's hard for me because, I mean, like, think about what we've seen, you know, like, I think one of the most shocked I've ever felt watching a fight beside, all right, so number one would be Chael Sonnen versus Anderson Silva one. Like, how shocked I was until the, obviously until the end, until Anderson came back and won. But number two would be, for sure, in my lineup, Garbrandt versus Dominick Cruz. I never I never in my life thought that Garbrandt was going to win that, dude. And he went in there and he made Dominick Cruz look like it was his first time ever fighting.
Yeah, those are probably top 10 shocking moments for me. I mean, I would have to put Gonzaga knockout Crow Cobb and Sarah knockout GSP ahead of it. That was huge. Like, I remember telling a friend of mine, you know, another former fighter, that he that Garbrandt was going to get exposed badly in that fight because I viewed him as being a little more than like a miniature Dan Hardy at that point. But he looked so fucking good in that fight. And I don't know if that was more him looking good or Dominick looking bad. But then he looked similar in that last fight he had. I mean, Garbrandt, when he's on, is great. I just think he has a tendency to be very emotional. If I were him, I'd want to continue building some momentum before fighting somebody like Figueiredo. And for all we know, this could be another situation like when TJ went down to 125. You know, if you're cutting too much weight, taking too much out of you, it seems to just really impact your durability a lot. And so, you know, who knows how it's going to go. So I have to bet on Figueiredo. Would like to see Garbrandt win. I think he's fun. And, you know, that'll be interesting to see how it goes.
100%.
Admittedly, I think that's probably what's keeping 125 alive.
Yeah.
Because, like, I half expected after Figueiredo beat Benavidez for him to say that he was going up to 135. You know, because I can't even think of any other 125ers other than those two.
Yeah, I was also looking through the rankings yesterday, just breezing through. Like, when I have fuck all to do at work, I just look through UFC rankings. but there's, like, Alexandre Pantoja. There's Alex Perez. There's this Russian guy that fought on the previous card that I don't remember his name. It's like Askarov or something like this. That looks pretty impressive. But yeah, other than that, dude, I couldn't name anyone. I think Davison's a guy that they could market as, like, you know, defend the belt a couple times if that's what he chooses and then push him up to 135. But in terms of the matchup with Garbrandt, like, we don't know what Garbrandt looks like at 125, right? Like, we don't know how the power will transgress, like, going down a weight class. And we saw it with TJ. Obviously, his chin couldn't hold up at 125 from cutting all the weight. Who knows what happens with Garbrandt? But what we do know for certain is that Davison can cut the weight, and Davison hits fucking hard at 125, and he's a problem for anybody he fights, I think, in both weight classes.
Exactly. And we know that Davison can knock people the hell out, and we know that Garbrandt can get knocked out. And I also think Davidson's jiu-jitsu is a lot better than Garbrandt too.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, he's just slick. We saw that in the Tim Elliott fight. And Tim Elliott's also not a slouch on the ground. I think he exposes himself a little bit too much in stupid situations. Like, Elliott's not the smartest fighter, but we saw Davidson catch him in that guillotine choke real fucking quick, you know?
Oh, yeah. And how good is Garbrandt's ground game? And have we really ever seen him use jiu-jitsu? and I can't really think of any time when he was either on his back or really willingly grappling at all.
Yeah, I think the only time I've ever seen him is actually hitting takedowns and in scrambles. But it's a very good point. Otherwise, did you manage to catch any of the Bellator fights? Or
no, unfortunately, I didn't. I heard they were fairly lackluster. What were your thoughts?
I was really happy to watch Pico actually go in there and wrestle, Aaron Pico.
Yeah.
I think training with Greg Jackson's really helped him kind of slow his game down a little bit. So it was nice to see him not go in there like trying to gunsling with strikers, like actually try to take guys down and do what's good.
Well, I mean, yeah, that's definitely what Jackson's the best at. You know, one could argue that they make guys boring, but like they're good at sort of getting guys to slow things down and fight smart and technically rather than just going in and banging. I remember they turned Mike Perry into a jabber.
Yeah, essentially. And I don't think he really liked it.
No, I can't picture a guy like Mike Perry really fitting in with the guys at Jackson.
100%. You know, like, I think that him training with guys like Yoel and like ATT is just a better overall mix for him.
Agreed. I mean, like, because philosophically, he and Greg Jackson are like the opposite people.
Yeah, for sure. And it was nice to see Sergio Pettis pick up a win. I mean, Ricky Bandejas, that guy is also really talented. I think Bellator is a little underrated when it comes to the lighter weight classes. I mean, all the weight classes, these guys are gunslinging. So it's nice to see some talent kind of mixing around.
Oh, definitely. I mean, the reality is Bellator guys are world class. I know they don't get near the love that the UFC does, but they're still like fucking elite. And I mean, and I think, you know, this just shows, you know, not just Bellator, but other promotions too, how well guys do when they do end up coming over to the UFC. You know,
100%.
Like, I know. And so, like, you know, like Eddie Alvarez became champion, you know?
Yep.
And that was for, you know, deeper in his career than, you know, I think by the time the UFC got him, he was already kind of past his prime.
I think he was on that tail end of like the last good performances that he could give at the moment.
Exactly. And so, I mean, you know, Bellator guys are world class. The UFC has been so good at establishing the brand that as a result, Bellator just isn't going to be respected like the UFC is. I mean, it sucks to say, but it's true. You know,
yeah, 100%.
You know, it's like a Target brand medical adhesive strip works just as well as a Band-Aid, but everybody wants a fucking Band-Aid.
Yeah, it's a good fucking point.
Yeah.
Well, guys, thanks for joining the podcast this week. Next week, we've got also some pretty cool fights. We've got Alex Caceres on a fight card, Nazrat Haqparast, who, by the way, I met on a train 2 weeks ago in Germany. Benil Dariush, we got Chris Weidman fighting, Derek Lewis, Alexi Olnik, and Massachusetts' own Peter Barrett will be fighting next week, August 9th, on a UFC fight card. So, shout out to Slippery Pete. Today's also my jiu-jitsu coach's Banana Juliana Cotino's birthday. So happy birthday, brother. Thanks for joining us, guys. Birthday. Cheers.